Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And today we're live here on WYPR. You can call us 410-662-8780. You can email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. And we're all about Thanksgiving today.
We sure are. It's exciting. I can't believe it's here.
So it's a Turkey Day chat for us. And we have someone left us a note outside the station. So you can reach us via email. And if you really need to, I guess you can leave a note outside the station. But this is really sweet. Someone that had emailed with questions before emailed us about an apple tart there that they had.
Yeah, that was a creme brulee apple tart.
And it says, "Dear Cindy and Tony, your show has become a Sunday tradition for me and my husband, so much so that you've inspired us to take our love of food to the next level. My career as a Baltimore City school teacher often leaves me too exhausted to cook at the end of the day, and listening to your show never fails to get me excited to play around in the kitchen. As a result, my husband and I have decided to launch a blog about gluten-free living. I have celiac disease in Baltimore, and are currently prepping to open our own business selling gluten-free desserts."
Oh, that's great.
"Since we are in the tinker and practice with recipes stage, we thought you might enjoy some of our bounty, and I'm sure let us know, Rachel and Harvey, when we should come check some stuff out.
That's cool. Very good.
We also
Thank you so much. A
quick early response on Instagram. That may start the, because our announced theme was, this was going to be a side dish showdown, right?
Turkey side dish. All right.
So that's someone had posted on our Instagram story.
Cool.
The question, how much sausage and sage stuffing is too much to eat in a day?
Never is too much. There's never too much of that.
That's from @BeMoreCatLover.
That's funny.
There's never too much. So how much stuffing do you think you could eat?
Unfortunately, that's all I want to eat on Thanksgiving. I have no desire whatsoever
to eat a pound?
Of course not. But I don't know.
Could you eat 3/4 of a pound?
Jeez, Tony. All I know is I will be at the restaurant on Thanksgiving, and then the next day I'm hoping to drive to North Carolina to my sister's, where my family will be. And if my sister doesn't have some stuffing left over for me, I'm going to be like a child having a fit because I love
stuffing.
Why don't
you just have a bag of stuffing in your car on the drive down? And
well,
you can
that
slowly,
would be gross.
Like, then you can tighten up little balls of stuffing and just
Tony,
eat them
stop.
Like popcorn. No?
Thanks, Be More Cat Lover.
Is that not attractive?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So stuffing is your favorite side dish?
Oh, totally. And the sauce on the stuffing. And my mother makes potato puree or mashed potatoes. You know, she's always made them so beautifully. They're always silky and amazing. So I've always loved her mashed potatoes, but she made those frequently throughout the year, so that wasn't something I was totally craving. It's the stuffing that you crave. And my sister
why do people not make stuffing? I mean, call us and tell us why you don't make stuffing all year long.
Every now and then my mom would roast a chicken and stuff it, you know, when we were kids, and it really was a treat and we all got really, really excited about it. But yeah, it's just tied to Thanksgiving. I think that's the answer. But yeah, let's hear what people say.
So
Tony, are we live today?
Yeah, for
yes,
God's sake.
It's so fun.
So you can't use any of those words you like to use.
Oh, well, that's true. It's a shame.
But you can reach us, 410-662-8780, by golly.
Uh-huh.
And
you never say that.
No, never, ever. No, I just say God bless America. So put your chef hat on for a second.
I always have my chef hat on, Tony.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. It looks great. Would you tell everyone how...
Jeez.
I'm being nice.
No, you're not.
As nice as I get.
No, well.
Mm. Would you please tell everyone how to safely make stuffing?
Okay.
The old-fashioned
way
is to take stuffing and put it in a raw bird.
Yeah.
So talk for a second, you know, on a sanitary.
Okay. Well, first of all,
clearly
I'm not
a
scientist, nor am I.
But you have.
Please don't hold me.
But you have appropriate sanitary habits.
Yeah. I can give you an idea. Okay. I'm not going to be held responsible for the healthiness of people's stuffing. But the main thing is that you want to make it ahead, and it should not be hot going in the bird. So make the stuffing, and you know, typically when you're making stuffing, you're letting your bread dry out anyway. Now, there are many, many different breads you could use. My mother used to use Wonder Bread, and that is because she grew up, I mean, she learned to cook during that time, and she would cut the crust off and cut it into squares. She would use an electric knife. which was also extremely popular back then. My dad, the butcher, would use the... This is how cool the electric knives were back then. My dad, who was a master butcher, would use an electric knife to slice a turkey when I was a little girl. So that's how cool those were. But anyway, she would cut her stuffing into squares and put it in the roasting pan that she was going to roast a turkey in. I'll never forget that because I was always, well, that's good use of what.
I'm picturing
Tony's
going
to interrupt me now.
I am. I'm picturing your dad in a fine pair of holiday slacks.
Definitely.
Using the electric knife.
Yeah.
Right?
And they were probably corduroy, ribbed corduroy,
there you
quite
go.
Frankly. And yes, absolutely, my dad.
Maybe a nice maroon.
No, he wouldn't have. It would have been like goldish beige.
There you go.
Yeah, no, daddy wouldn't wear maroon. That would not have been his repertoire. But yeah, so make a stuffing, you know, if you're, okay, simplest stuffing in the world, small dice of onion and celery. You want about 60% onion, 40% celery, or 70% onion, 30% celery. You decide. Once you cut up and do a nice, try to do a nice consistent dice of everything so it's all the same size. That way it cooks evenly and also looks nice. And once you've cut your onion and celery, put it in a bowl, toss it with salt and pepper. Now, before you cook it. And that's important, I have to say. It really does affect the way it tastes. And then you melt butter in your large saute pan and you gently cook the onion and celery until it's just beginning to get soft. You don't want it to be, you don't want it to caramelize. You do not want it to turn brown and you do not want it to be super soft. You want it to have some body and texture left by the time you're going to add it and put it in the bird. So then you just simply cool that down. Well, actually, I don't cool it down. I add it immediately to the breadcrumb and then I cool that down. And you can make that the day ahead. That's the beauty of that. And then you can stuff your turkey with it. And with the turkey, you know, it's common sense. You rinse it out with cold water. I was watching some horrible show one time where these women didn't know how to cook and the lady washed her chicken out with soap and water. And I'm like, oh, dear God.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So just rinse it out. That would never have occurred to me that anybody would think that that was the right way to go. So I will make it very clear that you rinse it out with cold water, pat it dry on the inside, remove the gizzards, the neck, all those things are usually stored in the back end of the cavity where the neck is now rather than inside the big cavity. So you don't want to miss that because you do not want to roast your turkey with the gizzards stuck
with
in the back end of the bird.
There, yeah.
So pull those out and make sure that cavity is clean as well. And also my mother, if you have a big enough turkey, you can stuff the neck cavity as well. And that was always a little tiny treat. Like I was always like, I ran next and was standing next to my dad the moment he started slicing that turkey because I knew that stuffing was coming out. And the stuff in the neck cavity is truly, truly the best part because it's not a lot and it's usually very, very flavored by the bird. And when I, you know, and well, I won't get ahead to how I cook the turkey. I'll let you just ask that question about the stuffing.
Okay, let's grab a call and I have
yeah,
an email
please.
Behind that. So Ray in Brooklyn Park, go ahead, Ray. You're on the air.
Hi, Ray.
Hi. I'm listening to your program and obviously I'm a man and in my household, my wife is disabled, so I do all the cooking.
Okay, that's nice of you to cook.
Well, somebody's got to.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, years ago, when stovetop stuffing came into being, mm-hmm. prior to that, I used to make my own stuffing, mm-hmm. and it was a laborious, time-consuming job.
It is.
And when I discovered stovetop, I thought to myself, that stuff's really good.
Well, good.
And,
good.
I have used it ever since, and I was just wondering, by the way, whoever invented that has to be multimillionaires.
One would hope.
I hope so, yeah.
And I was just wondering how much of an impact on Thanksgiving dinner has these pre-made stuffing mixes had?
That's a good question, Ray.
I'm sure there's a lot of convenient products that exist now and have existed. Mm. Whether it's ready-to-go sweet potatoes or or instant mashed potato mixes. I mean, there's all kinds of convenience things, pie crusts that are ready-to-go.
Sure. Oh, well, I'll tell you what. My mother now uses the pre-made pie crust, which I never thought she would do.
I hope she's not listening.
And she does.
Hear you say that.
And she always made everything from scratch. Is Ray still there? Is he gone?
No.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm here.
Okay. Ray, That is I think it's really amazing of you to cook, and it is a challenge to do stuffing because it is a lot of handwork. That's what we call it in the kitchen. And I'm sure your stuffing is delicious, and I'm sure because it is certainly most likely made with great love. I bet it tastes very, very good, sir. And happy Thanksgiving to you.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, happy Thanksgiving, sure. Ray.
You too. Bye.
So the email, the quick note that I got is, I can't stand cranberry sauce.
Oh.
What substitute do you suggest?
Maybe it's because they
get... Brendan Mount Vernon.
I wonder if they get canned, because I can't stand canned cranberry sauce either. But if you make it fresh, it's really good. This is the thing.
What if someone just doesn't like cranberries?
So what would you have instead? I would probably do poached pears instead, something like that, because you need something that has
a sweet tart, something.
Yeah, you need some sort of fruity thing, because a turkey just needs it. It needs fruit. An apple chutney, poached pears. Honestly, you could kind of turn the butternut squash into the thing that's sort of sweet, because butternut squash can be sweet. You could always add a tiny bit of sugar to the squash. We're making butternut squash and apples for our foie gras prep right now. And oh my gosh, every time the cook is making it next to me, I'm just like, it just smells so good. We do a small dice of the butternut squash, saute that in butter with a little bit of cinnamon and a little bit of nutmeg. And you can certainly add any kind of spices like that that you like. And then add the apples near the end and just toss. And it's just so perfumed and so pretty. So maybe you could do something like that instead of cranberries. But yeah, I just love the fruit. Maybe you could do something with raspberries. Maybe you could do something with, I don't know. I mean, maybe something with passion fruit.
I was going to say, one of the other fruits that are in season right now are persimmons. One of the only things in season.
Yeah, yeah.
And persimmon probably can make pretty
They're
nice.
They're not easy.
Persimmon and apple are probably pretty nice chutney together, especially a nice tart apple.
Like a pink lady or something.
Let's talk to Lola about dry bird issues.
Hey,
Lola. Go ahead.
Yes, this is Lola Gray from Baltimore, Maryland. I'm calling to find out. I had read some time ago that you could take the turkey after it's thawed out of its wrapper, of course, and clean it, and then put it back in the refrigerator for up to 24 hours to dry the skin out, which would cause the turkey to brown more sufficiently. However, I don't want to sacrifice the browning of the skin for drying out the bird.
I think that depends on the environment of your refrigerator and what kind of refrigerator you have, because I'm in the process of buying a refrigerator, and I just realized that some of them are very, very prone to the environment of the product in your in the refrigerator. I never knew that, because ours aren't like that at work. And so I think it's going to depend on your fridge. But that aside, so if you know what kind of environment your refrigerator creates, then that's going to help to answer your question. I think it's a great idea to take it out of the cryovac, because it's kind of, to me, it's almost like letting it breathe in a way, if you will. And I do like the idea of washing it, making sure it's dried, making sure that skin is dried. And yeah, if it's exposed, if the skin is exposed to air like that for 24 hours, I think that's a good idea.
Usually a bird that's been frozen is going to be holding some water, so that's not unreasonable. I don't know if I would wait 24 hours, maybe 6 to 8 hours or something like that.
I don't know. Or do
it overnight and then
I've never
then
done
starch
it.
A bird
so
in the
to be perfectly honest, I've never done it. So you know, you can't answer the question properly if you've never done something. But common sense says I'm going to disagree with Tony. I don't think it matters if you leave it in there for 24 hours, as long as your refrigerator's at temp. Make sure your refrigerator's close to freezing. This is not the time to have an issue with your refrigerator, for sure.
Well, there's nothing as beautiful as a golden bird on Thanksgiving
No doubt.
Day.
No doubt. Well, you know, I started to talk about how I cook my turkey, but we slip pieces of butter underneath the skin, and that is another thing. It's self-based.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's going to be crisp because you're doing a beautiful cheat, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're adding fat under there, and the meat's going to stay moist too.
Yeah, I was just saying if you had butter under the skin, it does help also to brown the skin as well, because you're giving it fat near the surface, and it helps to keep the bird moist.
If you do that, give us a call back and tell us how it works.
Yeah, I'm curious too. Thanks, Lola.
Okay, thank you so much.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye bye. So we had we have a follow-up question with Ray. And asking how reliable pop-up timers are in turkeys.
You know, and again, I can't. Tony, can you answer that from experience? Because I don't go by a pop-up, so
yeah,
I can't answer that.
I expect that they're relatively reliable. Otherwise, those guys
they'd be in trouble.
I mean, frankly, there are a lot of lawyers out there that like to enforce when things don't work.
Yeah. I would expect it probably takes it to 165 degrees. That's my guess.
I mean, you're going to have on a big bird, you're going to have it rest up probably to the 170, low 170s range, which is where you want it to be. And if you're putting a thermometer in a bird just to check it for yourself, that's where you want to be. If you're at least at 165 when it comes out of the oven, you know you're going to come up another 5-7 degrees on average.
Mm-hmm.
So when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, it's all Thanksgiving. We will get to Thanksgiving wine at some point. We'll get to a Thanksgiving chef's challenge, really beautiful holiday version of it. And here for our break is a little Thanksgiving theme from the Vince Guaraldi Trio. Give us a ring, 410-662-8780, or email us formanwolf@wypr.org. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today. You can reach us 410-662-8780. It's all Thanksgiving chatter.
Mm-hmm.
And you can ask us questions, things you want to fix, decisions you're trying to make, if you're trying to figure out quantities and all that kind of business. Though Cindy's quantities on stuffing are not reliable. She doesn't even know how much she can eat.
Oh, boy.
You can also email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. Now, we've got a couple of follow-up emails that came after the last week's junk food program.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listen to that. So one was from Richard saying, I love really good onion rings with sriracha dipping sauce.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Wow.
And,
sounds spicy.
And from Angela in Towson, I also remember Pop Rocks.
Oh, yeah.
Oreos has a cookie with Pop Rocks in the filling.
No.
Comes out around July 4th. Yes, the candy does work.
Oh, wow.
Now I know what to get you for your birthday.
Oh, that's awesome.
Add something fun to the cookie.
Yeah, it does.
I would think it adds something
crazy.
Terrifying to the cookie. Thanks, Angela. Thanks for scaring the dickens out of me. Let's see. This is from Willis and Waverly, who's a frequent emailer. I try not to eat junk food too often, but I do try to make it kind of special. Champagne with potato chips or popcorn for a pseudo-fancy movie night, or have champagne and fried chicken on my birthday.
Champagne and fried chicken. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Speaking of sweet stuff, let's talk to Rebecca about sweet potatoes and decision-making. Rebecca, go ahead.
Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, I'm a huge fan of both of you.
Thank you.
So happy Thanksgiving first.
And happy
Thanks
Thanksgiving.
For calling
you.
In. Happy Thanksgiving.
I wanted to talk to you about what is your favorite liquor to put in a sweet potato casserole. Mm. I've done both brandy and Grand Marnier on different occasions. But I wanted to ask you also, do you ever have like a guilty pleasure? Do you ever put melted marshmallows on the top?
Ooh, there's so many things here. I have...
Yeah.
Personal issues with all these kinds of
Uh-oh.
Things.
Oh, that's
what because
Tony.
I mean,
let's get the personal issues out of the way.
Now it's too early in the day for me to have this kind of conversation with you, Rebecca.
I love you, Rebecca.
So marshmallow. Okay, the first issue is a negative one. I do not like marshmallows. I aggressively do not like marshmallows.
Hmm.
That doesn't mean that people don't. And when I was a little kid, marshmallows and sweet potatoes are the best thing in the entire world. I don't know what turned me.
So
I guess Tony's telling
you is if you have some kids you're feeding, he thinks it's okay to put marshmallows on the sweet potatoes.
If they're big kids and they like marshmallows, and if you like them, you're the one doing all the work. You might as well make it the way that you want it.
Yeah.
As far as liquor to put into the casserole, man, the flavor of rum is awfully good in that kind of a dish.
I agree with that. I put Gosling's Black Seal rum in with my sweet potatoes when I make them.
One of the amber rums.
What is that?
It's called Gosling's Black Seal rum.
Okay.
Yeah, it's delicious.
From Bermuda. One of those, it has a little more of that sugarcane flavor,
like
some of the brown rums do.
Yeah,
oh,
it's
boy.
Really
well,
good.
Myers is a good one.
By the way,
Jamaica.
Rebecca, it also makes a good cocktail. So, you know, if you want to have fun while you're cooking.
Yeah. If you're making eggnog.
If you're making eggnog,
that, you know, that's.
Oh, my gosh. Do you make homemade eggnog, Rebecca?
No, my father makes the best. It actually made Baltimore's, best vaccine, you know, issue a few years ago.
Very good.
Really, I'll come in. I'll give you that recipe. He lived to be 100 and a half.
Oh.
And it, maybe the eggnog had something to do with it. He was in perfect shape to the end.
Fantastic.
He was either, he was either just the right balance or he was preserved by it.
Yeah, I love
this is wonderful.
I love eggnog.
Well, thank you.
Thanks,
thank
Rebecca.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Have a great holiday.
Thank you.
Same here, darling. Bye-bye.
So Lucinda's on the line, and she is interested in an update.
Hey, Lucinda.
Lucinda, go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Well, hello. It's delightful to talk to you. And I did make your cranberry relish last year.
Okay.
It was delicious, but I don't think I ever got the right consistency.
Okay.
So I was going to ask you for a little update on that.
All right. One of the things you have to do, because the cranberries do not take that long to cook, I mean, literally, they cook in probably 3 or 4 minutes. They'll burst. They'll begin to burst. And once they do that, you're really pretty well done. So you actually need to take the port and the red wine and the fresh orange juice and all the spices to almost a glazing consistency. Not quite that far, but short of that. So that it is sort of, you're sort of looking for the consistency in the poaching liquid that you want in your end result. It will become a little thicker when it cools down. So stop it short of it being pretty darn thick, basically, and then add the cranberries.
And the cranberries. And then, like, you boil it down, then you said to strain it, and then you add your cranberries.
Right. That's right.
And you don't cook it more than 4 minutes after that?
Yeah. Once the cranberries are washed and drained and ready to go, just put them in that hot liquid. Yeah, let it simmer on low heat for, 4 or 5 minutes, and then you should be good, and that should be, it should be done.
And then you can put it in the fridge. I told my sister-in-law I would bring it.
Oh, good for you. Yeah, I would cool it down a little, because it's like hot molten lava at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would cool it down in a very, like a, if you have a long casserole dish or some sort of a long dish that's shallow, you know, kind of cool it down for a few minutes. Well, you know, maybe like an hour on the counter. I mean, there's nothing in there that's going to cause food poisoning, really. So, you know, it's not like you're cooking pork. So leave it to cool on the counter in a cool spot in your basement and in a window, whatever, and then pop in the fridge. Because you actually will do more hurt to your product in your refrigerator by putting that in the refrigerator hot than you would by leaving that sit out for a little bit to cool down. Yeah, you don't want to ever put anything super hot in your refrigerator because it drops the temperature immediately in your refrigerator. It increases the temperature of your refrigerator immediately. Thank you. Yeah, so great. I'm glad you
Lovely.
Made it.
Thank
Good
you
luck.
So much.
Thanks,
Lucinda. All right, thanks, Lucinda. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you guys. Bye-bye.
So we have an email, and you can reach us via email, foremanwolf@wipr.org. We're live today, or call us, 410-662-8780. It's Thanksgiving, food, wine, side dishes, disagreements, all those kinds of classic holiday traditions.
How to avoid difficult conversations at the Thanksgiving table.
Which is totally unavoidable because Uncle Jack is going to be there.
Hey.
You have an Uncle Jack.
I do.
Oh, sorry. That wasn't awkward. It's funny that there's an email here that coincides perfectly with a particular culinary fantasy I've been having. The subject is green bean casserole. Any ideas for perking up this standard side dish? It's from a Tony. So I did not send it to
Tony,
us.
Tony, come on. Don't try to hide your questions by sending it in, pretending you're
listening.
Another
thing I don't like, even though I like everything, it's another thing I don't like. I don't like green bean casserole.
Oh, you don't like, what do you like, Tony? Yeah, I don't know.
I like all kinds of stuff. Okay. I just don't like green bean casserole or marshmallows particularly.
Mm-hmm. So how are you going to improve
it? I think it
should be your job to improve the green bean casserole because, frankly,
if I were Cindy Wolf, I would get pristine green beans.
Uh-huh, yes.
And I would blanch them. To make sure they're seasoned properly.
For sure.
And I would make hollandaise.
I mean, I think that's the difference, is you just use fresh product.
And I would mix really nice mushroom d'Uxelles with a hollandaise that are made with mushrooms with really good flavor, like hedgehogs or something like that.
Wow, that's going to be rich.
Right? Hang on.
Are you saying these things?
Yes, I am.
The one that makes fun of me and butter and cream?
And
All right.
I would garnish those green beans perfectly stacked up with that hollandaise, mixed with the mushroom d'Uxelles.
Oh, so you're not making a casserole. You're doing
a la minute.
Wow. That's not a casserole, Tony.
Yeah, and then crumbled bacon. Uh-huh. And then a little bit of garlic breadcrumb.
Like bacon bits, Tony? Is that what you're saying?
No. I mean, as much as I love pre-prepared food, and I would never judge you for using it.
What about the onion ring part? You know, that's the biggest part of the green bean
clearly,
casserole.
Where's that other email? I would just eat them like that gentleman with the sriracha dipping sauce, for God's sake.
You could make good onion rings.
Sure you can. I mean, just make a big old stack of onion rings.
You're on the track of doing everything fresh. So, yeah, you can just make your own onion rings. So, like you said, I mean, to be serious, you could
make the onion rings and have it with the champagne you're drinking while you're waiting for everything to finish, for God's sake.
Okay.
You know, why not?
Okay.
Why not? Mm-hmm. What do you think is the most underrated side dish at Thanksgiving?
I don't know. I think everybody likes everything. Maybe peas. I don't know. I don't know if people do peas. We do, and I don't understand it because peas, I really dislike frozen peas. So, you know,
peas don't make a lot of sense to me.
I don't want to get on your bandwagon. Frozen peas are fine.
Peas come in June, you know.
Yeah, I like fresh peas so much, but frozen peas are fine.
But there's no reason that you shouldn't have
peas.
Beans now.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. We didn't get enough beans this year because I usually put some
Thanksgiving. Wet, difficult year.
Yeah, I'm going to be using, Anson's Mill produces some amazing dried beans, and I'm going to be using Petite Rouge peas from Anson's Mill in Charleston.
Yeah, they weren't a swamp all season. So maybe talk about Hop and John for a second because that to me is one of the, Thanksgiving to me is.
I love Hop and John for Thanksgiving.
Because it's always at work.
And you can make that the day
before. It's always turkey. Hop and John and collard greens. Those are the three things I care about at Thanksgiving.
Collard greens. The Hop and John, the idea is that you flavor your beans, whichever kind you're going to use. And as I said, typically you would use black-eyed peas or field peas to make Hop and John, which is a traditional low country dish and has African roots. And if you don't want to use those, like I'm going to use my Petite Rouge peas, which are a little red pea, then you can cook those with some sort of bacon. And that is the whole point is that Hop and John is one of the more basic of all the perlos. So the idea is that you cook the beans and you add rice to the pot at the end of the cooking and the rice absorbs all the flavor that you've put into the peas or the beans. So in this case, I like to saute a small dice of onion and shallot. And I add andouille sausage because I always have it in my walk-in. And I like the flavor that andouille sausage gives off. And that's a cold smoked pork sausage that has a lot of sort of Creole spices in it. And it's very flavorful and a little bit spicy. And a small dice of that, add that to the onions as they're cooking and shallots. And then I add a good piece of slab bacon. So if I was making Hop and John, let's say for 8 people, I would probably add a pound of bacon, slab bacon to it. And I would take the piece of bacon and cut it into just sort of large squares. I would actually brown that in the pan separately and then add that, the fat and the bacon to the pot, add the peas, add water or chicken stock. Preferably chicken stock, and then deglaze that bacon pan with a little bit of red wine and add that to the pot as well. A little bit of Tabasco or whatever your favorite spice is. You could add cayenne pepper. And do not add salt at this point because you are cooking beans and you don't want to add any extra salt that you've already got some through the bacon. They absorb the liquid less quickly and less evenly if you add salt to the water. And let that cook. And obviously you need excess liquid there because you're going to end up adding rice to that. And at the end you add the rice. And you have to make sure your ratio of liquid to beans to rice is correct. And I'm going to let you figure that out.
Well, and you don't want to work the rice so much. Otherwise
you just stir the rice into the whole batch and put a lid on it and let it steam up. Yeah. Yeah, I love Hop and John.
And
the collard greens are important. I mean, I think the collard greens, which I make a smoked ham hock stock. So I use a bunch of smoked ham hocks, and we use chicken stock as well, and I put Tabasco in there at the end before I cook the greens. But that's we put bacon in there as well now. You want that stock. You know, the collard greens are only as good as the stock. And if you have tremendous pork flavor in that stock and good chicken, you know, tone to it from your chicken stock, those are going to be some seriously good collard greens. And when I have a new cook, and he was asking me how to clean the collard greens. You just grab a hold of the top part of the rib and use your hand along the sides of the rib and pull the rib out. You don't want to cook the ribs. I think that they're much nicer if you remove the rib, but you don't want to lose any of the leaves. And then do wash them very, very well. I've noticed that there are oftentimes a decent amount of bugs and collard greens, so you want them in a big sink of water where they're really immersed.
And bugs are not anyone's favorite side dish.
No. And then once the stock, this is another one of those times, kind of like when we were talking about the cranberry relish, where you cook the broth or the poaching liquid first and get it to a right consistency. You really need to cook that smoked ham hock broth first, get really good flavor, strain it, and then cook the collard greens, which usually take about 30 minutes, depending on how mature they are.
We've got two quick email goodies. One is Heather called back, our gluten-free baker.
Mm-hmm.
To suggest putting meringue on the sweet potatoes instead of marshmallows.
Okay, which, yum. Yeah, that's great. I love that.
Yeah, I would. I'm sorry, Heather. I still probably would not like that.
Oh.
And I've got one other junk food follow-up here. I'm not into it.
You're depressing.
No. I'm joyful.
Jesus,
are you kidding?
To be fun.
I'm just not joyful about marshmallow.
Okay.
Get over it.
Mm.
Sue in Ellicott City wrote us an email waxing on about growing up in the area, loving Hershey's chocolate. And the debut of Reese's Peanut Butter Cups changed everything.
When she was little? I wonder when they came out.
I know what you mean, because I'm 53 and they still change everything.
I love the Easter egg ones.
Yeah.
For some reason, that shape makes them even better.
When we come back on Formidable Fun Food and Wine, it's more Thanksgiving talk. We'll do a few more recipes. Take your calls, 410-662-8780, or email us, formanwolf@wypi.org. Got an email to get to, and then a lovely chef challenge. All of that and more on Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today. You can reach us, 410-662-8780. We still have a few emails to get to real quickly. It's foremanwolf@wypr.org if you want to reach us electronically.
And we'd love to hear from you if you have any questions about Thanksgiving.
And I have an email with a subject line, turkey parts. sounds like a band I listened to in the 80s. We have a small oven and only one or two guests coming over on Thanksgiving. Any tips or thoughts on cooking turkey parts, breasts and thighs, rather than the hassle of the whole turkey?
I got that.
It would simplify the cooking on the day, but also allow us to have the turkey staple. Thanks, Will.
Okay. So I love confitting the legs. And so that way you can pull the legs off the carcass and you'll have more room in your oven if leave the breast on the bird. You can take the wings off too. You could probably even get two small turkeys in there. You know, it depends on how small your oven is.
I think they're trying to just buy part, whether it's legs or breast.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, if you're doing the breast just, you know what, honestly, if you're going to just buy the breast and it's off the bone, I would grill it. But you can roast it in the oven. Just, you need to elevate it. You have to get it off the bottom of the pan. So you really need a rack, and I would season it very, very well with salt, pepper, maybe put a little bit of fresh rosemary, maybe even underneath the rack, put some mirepoix, carrot, celery, and onion, just so it sort of perfumes it in the oven. I would definitely put rosemary in with that mirepoix. Again, I would still slip some butter underneath the skin and season it well and roast it, or with the legs, you could confit them, which is immersed in butter. Season it a little bit prior to, if you're just buying the legs, you're basically curing it with a little bit of salt, pepper, and a tiny bit of sugar. You don't have to do the sugar if you don't want to. And lay in bay leaves, whole peppercorns. And again, you could use the rosemary there. I would not put too much in, though. Rosemary can overpower very, very quickly. And then immerse it in butter and cook it in a very low temp oven for a long time, probably 2 hours. Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I might even slip a couple of pieces of bacon over the breast as it roasts to give it a little basting on the outside, and even slip a little bit of
any fat somehow. But
sage leaves under the skin is also nice.
Mm-hmm. Love sage with it, sure.
So let's take a call from Debbie in Towson. Debbie, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hi,
sure.
I'm almost 100% German, and I'm originally from the Midwest, and we would have never in a million years had sauerkraut on our Thanksgiving table, but I've now lived in Baltimore longer than I've lived anywhere.
Man, I love sauerkraut at Thanksgiving.
Our tradition, and I don't know where it came from, because it's not just a German tradition, it's something local.
I'm also German, of German descent and from the Midwest, having lived in the South also when I was little, but I lived in Indiana growing up, and we never had sauerkraut, right? And at Thanksgiving either. We always had all the traditional things, but sauerkraut is truly one of my favorite things. My mom and dad are from York, Pennsylvania, and my mother definitely has that Pennsylvania Dutch cooking aspect. But Tony, is sauerkraut something that's traditional here in Baltimore?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay, that's cool. God,
yeah,
I love sauerkraut.
We had potlucks at work for Thanksgiving. Somebody says, "Who's bringing the sauerkraut?" You know, everybody.
Yum.
Has it. But it's a nice foil, you know, for all the rich stuff.
Absolutely.
You know?
Oh, gosh, for sure. Again, that's a good point. That all that acid, the vinegar that's in the sauerkraut, oof.
Do you have a pet recipe that you follow?
Well, I use my husband's aunt's recipe, and
she took a
piece of pork, usually either a pork chop or country-style rib, and she would cook it, brown it, and then she would put in the kind of the classic sauerkraut in a bag, not always the canned stuff. She would save the juice to the side. She would grate a potato, and she would grate a Granny Smith apple.
Oh.
And she had sort of equal part apple juice and some of the sauerkraut juice as it cooked, and then caraway seeds.
Yeah, that's super old school.
Pork rib,
sometimes more mustard, the apples and the caraway seeds.
I've never heard of putting apples in there. That sounds great.
And then Granny Smith gave it a little extra tartness, but and then we always made it like a day or two before, and then as it sat, it got thicker,
and then
we always broke up the pork and put it back in.
Sure.
So, but it's a wonderful recipe, and we always fight over who gets to make it, because whoever makes it gets the leftovers.
There you go. Thanks, Debbie. That sounds great. Thanks for sharing.
That is worthwhile on a turkey sandwich too, to have some of that sauerkraut.
Yeah.
Yum.
Thank you.
I'll tell you what. Thank you, Debbie.
Thanks, Debbie. Happy Thanksgiving.
Let's take a call from Dan in Baltimore. Dan, go ahead.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Tom. Tony, Chef Cindy, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
Oh, just fine. Thank you. I had a couple of things I wanted to touch with you. First, Chef Cindy, I'm going to be asking later in the thing for a recipe from you for a stovetop stuffing.
Okay.
Since you were asking about why we don't have stuffing more often.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason. Nobody has a bird all the time.
Oh, sure.
Tony, I agree 100% about marshmallows and sweet potatoes, but how about twice-baked sweet potatoes with savory things? Like, I came across a recipe some years ago that had fontina cheese and some shallots and a little bit of thyme, and you get the idea.
Well, yeah, but I mean that kind of thing can be fun. I also, I'm a big fan of sweet potatoes in Native American cooking. So that's where. So you think chilies right away? You think sweet potatoes with corn? Honestly, you can layer sweet potatoes with other elements. Sweet potatoes, again, tart apples, and onions.
That sounds good.
All baked.
They both sound fun. Both of those preps sound good, Dan.
Mm. Right. Yeah, well, I came across the sweet potato recipe in an Italian country cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying, why does American cooks always go with sweet additives for sweet potatoes?
Right. That's understandable. Yeah, it is very American to do what we do to the traditional sweet potato with those marshmallows. Your question about stuffing. My mother always, because we did love stuffing so much, she always made a casserole dish. She would make extra stuffing. She would stuff the bird, and we'd have the casserole. And everyone would fight over what came out of the bird, and then it would come down to that darn casserole dish. So my suggestion is to make that casserole almost as good. You can make the same stuffing, but I add a little bit of slightly reduced chicken and veal stock to mine. And you can't add very much. It can only be, if you're making, you know, I don't know, maybe 8 cups, 10 cups, whatever it is, you can only add a couple tablespoons. But if you toss that in once your stuffing is completely done, toss that in, it gives it that richness and that sort of that same flavor that it might have gotten the juices from the bird. So that's kind of a fun way to, if you're making stock and you maybe have some heavily reduced and you put it in your freezer, this is a time you can pull a little bit of that out. Maybe I know a lot of people do ice cube trays of reduced stock and maybe pull that out and just add it to it. And you can easily make that the day before, which is nice. I also like to add pecans to mine.
So thanks, Dan.
In some food magazine some years back, and we've done it a couple times at Thanksgiving. Since Thanksgiving is the quintessential American holiday, mm-hmm. don't use champagne. Use an American sparkling wine.
I think that I understand the sentiment absolutely, and I will enjoy my champagne and toast you, Dan, on Thanksgiving. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Sparkling is
Let's take a very quick call from Evan. And then we have more business to tackle, so you should be getting stressed, Cindy. Evan, go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah,
hi, Evan.
How are you?
Hey, how's it going? So I was just calling in response to your caller earlier that had an issue with cranberry relish
uh-huh.
or cranberry sauce.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother had the same issue when I was taking care of her and cooking for her a lot. But she loved Thanksgiving, so my alternative to that was I would make a, as you know, Tony, I make pickles now,
mm-hmm.
and I was just starting to make pickles before, so I would do a pickled apple relish.
Sounds good to me.
I think it worked really, really well, contrasting, you know, the richness of the bird and the stuffing and everything else. And basically, it was a 50-50 mix of apple cider vinegar, water, a little bit of allspice, and other, you know, warm-flavored spices,
mm-hmm.
a little bit of orange zest, and then I'd reduce that down so it was almost a syrup. And, I would add white vermouth to that, too, just a splash. And then reduce that down, and then a very fine diced apple. A very tart one, though, like a Granny Smith or something like that, and just let the apple heat up in it so it didn't get mushy, and that worked really, really well.
That sounds good.
Sounds really good, Evan. Thank you.
Thanks. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Awesome. Yeah.
So we have one other from Barbara. A traditional side dish with my family at Thanksgiving is creamed onions. We've always used frozen pearl onions. Any suggestion for improving this?
Yeah.
Go find some really sweet onions at the farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and
Cipollini's.
They're still out there. There were great big green onions at farmer's market that I bet you were like spicy and tasty and
yum.
Yeah, what kind of flavor.
What kind of wine are we going to have with turkey, Tony?
Well, it was good. I respect the wanting American sparkling wine for the American holiday thing. But that being said, you should drink what you like. And God bless Dan Rodericks, who years ago told us about how he was kind of gotten over on by Michael Mondavi telling him to drink Cabernet with his turkey at Thanksgiving.
Hmm.
So happy Thanksgiving, Dan, if you're listening. But Cabernet is pretty tannic. So the sweet spot is usually in richer whites and in a little bit lighter and zestier reds. So the first things you think of that are varietals you see in the States, you think of Chardonnay, you think of any Alsace varietals like Riesling or Gewürztraminer or something, and you think of Pinot Noir, you think of Zinfandel. And there are lots of other alternatives in the world. Rioja works very, very well.
Mm.
The wines from Alsace work very, very well. I have to admit, maybe my absolute favorite is to have a rich Pinot Gris from Alsace. And if you're looking for value in whites, Pinot Blanc from good producers, and you're in good vintages in 13, 15, and 16 for sure. 14 is no slouch. There's a producer named Fuchs, F-U-C-H-S, Henri Fuchs, who makes a great Pinot Blanc that's under $20 that is terrific. There are producers of Primitivo and Negromaro in the south of Italy. Menhir is one of those houses, M-E-N-H-I-R. Menhir produces Salice Salentino, if you're looking for a little bit more body and a zestier red for Thanksgiving dinner. If it's something that's a little bit prettier, I mean, there's all kinds of Nebbiolo from Piemonte, so not as big as Barolo, so not as tannic as that, but Nebbiolo can be really nice. But those are some ideas, and I don't think there's anything wrong with drinking champagne, especially a nice rich champagne all the way through with your bird.
I think that would be delicious.
So
that's
you
fun, lots of choices.
Are going to have, and this can be, because our time is tight, this is going to be a bit of a discussion. Chef's challenge. Why not?
What do you mean, a discussion?
Yeah, because we get along so perfectly in the kitchen. So so there's your there's your leftover challenge. Because that's the whole point of Thanksgiving, right? Get to the other day, get to the next day and have leftovers to play with. Come up with something.
So what are we doing? I'm confused.
There's a whole list of leftovers there.
Oh, I thought you said we were doing it together or something.
No, okay. you need to make me something to eat.
Excuse me. All right, so turkey breast, turkey leg meat, mashed potatoes, green something, mushroom, green bean casserole, cranberry sauce, candied sweet potatoes, cornbread stuffing, Brussels sprouts, pumpkin pie, and pear cobbler. Well, I can tell you what you do with the pumpkin pie and the pear cobbler. You just leave them alone and eat them. But the turkey breast, you know, I think if you make a little bit of, if you slice some, we never really have that much left over, I know, but you know, it's often meat that's close to the bird, to the bone, it tends to be smaller pieces. So it kind of lends itself to, maybe being hash.
Yeah. Make a hash.
And my mom always loved to make hash. So, you know, a little dice of potato, some of that, turkey, and I would definitely add a little bit of bacon to it. And I know I'm making, I can do whatever I want. Is that the point?
Yeah.
Okay. And so I will say, and I think I mentioned it before, but one of my favorite things to do, because oftentimes people want to make sandwiches, of course, the next day with the turkey, is I make a pomegranate mayonnaise, which is just so good with the turkey. Again, it all comes down to that whole fruit need that the turkey has. So a little.
I would do the pomegranate mayonnaise with you any kind of fun bread. I do like turkey as a cold sandwich. A slice of tart apple, slice of Manchego cheese, that pomegranate mayonnaise.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And
right.
If you have a little bit of slaw or something around.
So what are we gonna do with the mashed? What are we gonna do with the mashed potatoes? We could like make a little.
You're gonna fry them in a pan.
Okay.
In butter.
Mm-hmm.
Get them a little bit crispy on the sides.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna use a little bit of that green bean casserole.
You can and use do what with it?
And you're gonna cook that almost like a hash,
oh.
Right? Put that on that crispy mashed potato, poach an egg, put that guy on there.
Oh, there you go. That sounds
and you're
going to
have a nice big glass of the Henri Fuchs.
Okay. All right. Well, there's some ideas. Some quick ideas.
So anyway, well, thanks for listening to Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. If you want to listen to this or any other one of our podcasts, you can go to the WYPR website, wypr.org. Look for the Formula Wolf page, and you can find a full menu of them. You can email us, formanwolf@wypr.org. Thanks for the emails and the calls.
Yes, thank you.
You can follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media.
On Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf. On Instagram as Chef Wolf.
I am The Real Tony Foreman on Instagram. Thanks for the Instagram response today. And we want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Have a great, great holiday, hopefully with family and friends.
Thanks for listening.